From 7CTOs, my name is Etienne De Bruin, and you're listening to the CTO Podcast. Every week, I spend time with fascinating people that enrich the lives of chief technology officers around the world. From perfecting the basics of building technology organizations to inspiring our minds into shaping our future. As always, the CTO Podcast is brought to you by 7CTOs, helping CTOs become world-class leaders. Let's go. Welcome to the CTO Podcast. Today, I'm talking to Tracy Lafka, former CTO of FlyHomes. We talk about the frightening journey of rapid scale and the sadness and the intent with which we have to wind down our company sometimes. And we had a very good talk about that. So I hope you enjoy this time with Tracy and I. We also talk about designing your life, and it's whether you can hold two cocktails in two hands while balancing on a beach ball in Costa Rica. Enjoy. Tracy, welcome to the CTO Podcast.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
What are you doing these days?
Looking for a job.
What happened?
My most recent role at FlyHomes ended, and I'm out on the market. So anybody listening that is in search of an awesome CTO, I'm here.
World, get ready. Tracy is on the market. So, you know, there's a lot of people right now suffering through RIFs and layoffs and changes in their job status. What is it like these days to be out there on the job hunt? What's the vibe like?
I would say it's not a booming market. It's a tough market right now. And I think especially for my sweet spot, which would be kind of Series B, C startups, not a lot of startups are getting funded in those rounds right now. And I also have a long history in consumer-facing stuff. So I think that also is not where funding is going right now.
Were you part of a reduction in workforce, or did you decide to move on? And the reason I ask is because, again, there's so many fluctuations in the job market right now. I think it would be great just to dig in a little bit and help folks out there.
Yeah, for me, it was sort of a mutual decision as the company did go through a series of RIFs, and as it got smaller, it sort of fell out of my sweet spot, is what I would say, and where I'm most effective and what I'm really good at. I think it was a sort of mutual thing.
It's interesting for me because, you know, obviously I designed the CTO levels framework, and it's based upon this notion that our companies are complex adaptive systems, but that the complexity for the CTO increases as we have more people and bigger budgets. But then the reverse is then true. As the company is reducing its workforce, the complexity changes. And I can imagine how one could be signed up as CTO of a certain level of complexity. And then as the budgets change or get reduced, and as the team gets reduced, that, like you said, it kind of falls out of your sweet spot. It kind of falls out the type of CTO role that you want to have, the types of problems that you want to solve.
Yeah, that's right. I think it's a very interesting experience to go through sort of that rapid scaling and then rapid descaling, because they have kind of mirrored problems where when you're rapidly scaling, all your processes are broken and you're always kind of 6 months behind. There's a lot of change. And then you start building all of those processes. And then as you get smaller and smaller, well, now you have this stuff. You don't want to give it up, right? But you don't have the team anymore to support it. And so there's a lot of hard clinging, I would say, to what you've already done, you know, what you've already built, that is hard to let go of sometimes.
Yeah, I can imagine it's like you get some money, you buy a plot of land, and then you are like, you know, like a lot of young couples will say, well, let's just build a little one bedroom little shack on this marvelous property we have. And then they start increasing in their affluency or their income, and the house gets built on a kitchen, built on a second bedroom, built on three bedrooms, built on five ensuite bathrooms. And then they buy furniture, and they have friends, and they have social circles that's attracted by mansions. And then one day you're like, oh, well, we don't need this part of the house. And that house part goes. And then it was like, well, then all the furniture, everything has to go. And now the house is shrinking. It's interesting that I'm using a house analogy.
I was wondering where that was going. I felt like I use that a lot of times when I'm talking about architecture, that you always have one, whether or not it's a good one or not. So I think definitely startups are a little bit like that. And at what point do you need to build a new house? And then sometimes you have to just take the whole house apart again. So I don't know.
Burn the whole thing down. But can you speak to the rapid growth and then the rapid reduction? I love what you were saying about how you build these processes and you build the scaffolding and the infrastructure to handle this hyperscale. And then there's this apex and then things change. But now you have to unwind a bunch of things. And certainly you were, like you said, you were part of and had to execute on several rifts as your company was going through the downturn, which was obviously a macroeconomic situation. Can you speak a little bit to that rapid rise and then what it's like to sort of unwind things?
Yeah, I mean, I think rapid scaling, for some people, it's very unsettling. For me, it's a lot of fun. There's a lot of problems, but a lot of those problems get solved because you're like, well, we'll just add another person that's going to do that, take care of that thing. And it creates a lot of opportunity for people. We grew from 10 engineers to 60 in about a year, to give a sense of like what I mean by rapid scaling. So 6x the team, maybe it was 12 to 6, anyway, somewhere in there. And, you know, when you're doing that, a huge focus on hiring, a huge focus on getting the right people in the door in the right order, because you need to make sure that if you hire all the juniors first, you're going to have a lot of problems. But I enjoy that. I enjoy that whole process.
Just so I can jump in there, I often tell people the story of seven CTOs when we get together in our forums and we are processing challenges and things are difficult. There are often issues around scarcity and role definition and doing more with less. And I think that CTOs, especially ones that have come through software development and technology building, I think we're all masters of doing more with less. You know, I think cramming more bits into the memory from back in the day. But man, I have seen the fear of the Lord in people's eyes when they suddenly get an influx of cash. And all of a sudden, the CEO is like, dude, you need to spend as much money as you can, as quickly as you can. And I have seen people terrified of those situations. I've seen people frustrated and angry in the scarcity mindset, which is just, oh, but CEO doesn't understand the theory of constraints. But when that all gets removed and it's like, hey, blank checkbook, go and just spend, I have seen people terrified, but you're saying you actually relished that. You loved it.
To me, that's a much more fun problem than the other way. But it's not like just go nuts, go spend all the money. You know, we had a full real estate brokerage, a mortgage company, a title and escrow company, and we're supporting hundreds of employees out in the field. And so a 50-person, 60-person engineering team is still pretty small. Like 10 was ridiculously small for what we were trying to do. And so it wasn't like, oh, just go nuts, go spend all the VC money. But really, we're trying to build systems to support a lot of money flowing through the company. So I don't shy away from that. Like, to me, that problem of like, how do we go and hire the right people, build the processes to hire, and then help the teams kind of grow through growing up, basically, as a company, as an engineering organization, I just really enjoy diving into that set of problems.
Yeah, I had a CTO one time walk me through their hiring machine, you know, one of those, again, Series C, Series D companies that just where the hiring funnel itself becomes this highly optimized machine that is a home-rolled system inside of the company to be able to bring as many qualified candidates in as possible, get them through the 12-step process inside the company, and then eventually spit out a candidate that is good for the company. I imagine you had to build something like that as well.
That's right. I mean, I don't know what it's like to hire right now, but in the times where I've had to rapidly scale teams, there's been so much competition. I mean, this was in 2021, was when we were doing a lot of that hiring. Previously at my previous company, I also had a similar situation. And the competition was so intense that, like, if you took 2 weeks to get through a set of interviews and get to an offer with a candidate, you lost them.
2 weeks.
Yeah, I've definitely built those hiring machines. That's everything from getting the right recruiters, making sure as CTO, you're actually out there doing a lot of the attending events, going, doing a lot of glad handing and trying to get yourself out there so that people come to you. And then making sure that your interview process is as efficient as possible, that you're not wasting dev time, that you're not wasting candidate time, just trying to get people through.
What was your success rate, or what was your success ratio from candidate to employee? People that had to basically go into your system and potentially waste your people's time.
I would say of the people we actually interviewed, it was probably 10 interviews per hire, per one hire.
Got it.
And then probably another 10 or, I don't know, 100 people applying to get interviewed.
Yeah. Another question I have for you around this is, you know, especially as you were growing into the 40s and the 50s and the 60s, a really important thing for the role of CTO is to determine the capabilities of the organization, the dev organization, and then map that to what the business objectives are. Like you said, your company was diversifying or sort of rolling up various critical functions inside of the home buying process. How did you go about knowing that this next problem needs to be solved with additional bodies versus this next problem is an optimization issue that we just have to be more effective?
Some of what we were building out as far as like building out teams were areas where the business had been left to their own devices. We hadn't built anything for them. So some of it was figuring out like, okay, what are the areas where if we actually built product, we could have more of an impact on the business. And then there were areas, it's certainly like infrastructure and DevOps, they'd never had a DevOps person. And so the infrastructure and security needed work. It was fine for a Series A company or whatever, but like at the time we were expecting to grow really rapidly and potentially go public in 2 or 3 years. Well, that's a long security journey, right? And so there's a lot of things you have to do, and getting some of those ducks in a row, and you just need people that know how to do that brought into the company. So some of it was that.
Yeah, I sometimes struggle with, you know, if we have 3 developers in a group, do we need a 4th one?
Yeah, that to me is, what is the business asking for? And then what do they need? Because sometimes those are different. Sometimes they don't know to ask for something, or sometimes they're asking for stuff they don't actually need. So there's a little bit of intuition you build up over time.
Yeah, I hear you. And I think this is the challenge sometimes, is our COOs or our CEOs will look at us and say, well, you know, more productivity, more output equals you need to hire more people. And that's not always true.
It is not true. Because there's a tipping point. And I would say actually hiring people is inefficient in many ways, especially like in the short term, it's extremely inefficient because a new dev has to learn your systems, has to learn the people they're working with, has to learn the business. It's not like you drop a new dev in and then 3 weeks later you have a product. Like, that's just not how it works. And so when you're rapidly scaling like that, part of it is just like getting people in the door. Okay, now we're all going through this process of learning this stuff all together. And then in 6 months or 9 months, now we have this team that can really operate. It just takes time.
You know, when I hear people say technically code is a liability, it's the grossly inadequate interface between what the business wants and what computers are willing to do. And so I find it fascinating how you're saying actually, you know, adding people is inherently an inefficiency. It's really wasteful.
Right.
And as soon as that person joins, there's this race to turn them from waste into something beautiful, like a pot on the windowsill with beautiful bees and honey.
Yeah, I once worked under a CTO who reorged the entire dev team every 3 months for a year. And it takes 6 weeks at least, even if people know the company, know the code, know whatever, it takes teams 6 weeks to start gelling and understanding, oh, you're good at that and I'm good at this. And so then you get 6 weeks of productivity out of them and you shake it all up again. Why are we doing this?
That CTO sounds like they were super bored and maybe they were like Zeus.
They might have been. I took over running tech at that company. And part of my takeaway from that is move the work, not the people, right?
Wow.
As much as you can. We want to put more resources into this part of the product than this other one. Instead of moving the people around, is there a way to shift the work around?
Yeah, I love that. I love that idea. A friend of mine once said to me that when I do one-on-ones or when I do hackathons with my team or when I do a new activity, oftentimes I will do that because I myself am worried that I am boring or that I am not spicing things up for my developers or I am not creating this dynamic environment. When predictability and boringness for some people is exactly what they want. And for me to come in and shake up the one-on-ones or to have everybody do this new thing because I read about, you know, it almost sounds like that's what that person was doing. I'm sure there was method in their madness, but the issue of keeping things stable and respecting the relationships that have been forged and recognizing the extraordinary effort that goes into establishing relationships makes total sense to me that you would say, well, let's move the work around, but let's move it inside of a beautiful established web of relationships.
Right. Yeah, I think the org needs to be flexible to the business, but it doesn't need to be shifted around every 3 months. I always try and do a bigger reorg or a bigger look at like what the priorities are and adjust the teams accordingly once a year. Even then, move people around a little bit. I always say there's a million kinds of engineers, but one of the ways that you can split out engineers is there's some people that love to know every single thing about one particular area of the business or one particular area of the code, and they're deep, deep experts in that, and change makes them really uncomfortable. And then you have other devs who get bored. Usually, if you have more than two teams, there's enough space there to accommodate both kinds of people because you want to have those anchors holding all the historical thought about like what went into building this part of the system or whatever. But then you also want to give those people that cross-pollination that comes from like, oh, well, in my other team, we did this. And like you get those ideas moving around the organization. So when I say move the work, not the people, I don't mean never move the people. It's more nuanced than that, but it's more just like don't arbitrarily shake things up because you're bored or whatever.
Are you ready to elevate your team's performance and your own career as CTO? Introducing the 7CTOs Growth Program. With 7CTOs, you'll join a supportive community of tech leaders dedicated to helping you reach new heights. Our group coaching program, led by experienced CTOs, focuses on the proven CTO levels framework. Assess your team, processes, and technology challenges with our easy-to-complete assessments, and then dive deep into monthly coaching calls where you'll get unstuck and gain insights on specific topics. Craft actionable plans tailored to your needs, guided by expert advice and playbooks designed to drive results. Plus, gain access to our exclusive CTO community for ongoing support and collaboration. Sign up now and start your group coaching adventure for only $300 per month or $3,000 per year. Your membership includes priority access to all 7CTOs events and activities. Don't miss out on the opportunity to join a global community of experienced CTOs, attend virtual events, and participate in confidential group coaching sessions. Visit 7ctos.com/growth and level up your leadership skills today. Tell me, Tracy, as you were part of this rapid scale, growing from 20 people to 60 people in 12 months, what are some of the things that you saw broke down or maybe that surprised you in I know you mentioned the processes break. What other breakdowns did you experience that maybe some of our listeners who are in rapid scale mode could have their eyes open to?
I think the things that are really difficult are you're typically, as you're creating more teams, you're taking the scope of a team. You're usually splitting up a team. I mean, sometimes you'll create a team that's, but usually you wouldn't create a team of all new people to do an all new thing. I mean, maybe you do that, but typically you're taking some people that are already in the org and splitting them out, and code boundaries become difficult because one team did all the work on this one area of the code or one product up until now. As you split that, then it's like, well, who owns it? And then, you know, it's natural for those teams to become enemies of each other. And I don't mean that like they like each other as people, but like the org structure creates friction. You end up with this coupling where one team can't just work on their features without informing the other team. Or if they do, they break stuff for each other until you're able to actually separate the code out. And that just takes time. It's one of those things where if I'm able to, my preference would be to put both those teams under the same director, let's say, or have their product people and the dev managers meeting together and agreeing on. The reality is they are coupled until the code can be broken up. And so you have to deal with that. You can't just ignore it. And well, my mandate is to do this thing that's going to break everything you're doing.
Yeah. What strikes me is in that rapidly scaling environment, the person that was there 2 months becomes sort of the senior person.
Which on the one hand is troubling because, you know, you're laughing like, oh my God, this is the senior person. On the other hand, I think it's nice for new people in the sense that when new people come in, there's organizations where it's the same people have been there for 20 years. And like until you've been there 20 years, you're a newbie. So it's the opposite problem of that.
Yes. What always struck me in this, the environments I was in was when you're onboarding, let's say person A, let's say you're onboarding Bob and you do your onboarding chat and you're like, oh, we're still going to address this part of the code or we're thinking of moving to a better version of Python or whatever. And then Bob leaves that onboarding, goes and does work. And then you talk to Alice, she joins the company and you talk to her about something. And then when she goes to Bob to go work with him, whatever was said to Bob almost becomes like part of the history of the company. It's like, oh yeah, we're upgrading to a new version of Python. Meanwhile, that's not exactly what you said. But then Alice goes into the workforce thinking, oh yeah, when are we going to upgrade to the new version of Python? And this little telephone story just becomes this horrendous snake eating its tail situation. And no one of the original people is always there to actually correct or be sort of the fundamental pillars of where this company is going.
Yeah. I don't know that I've always succeeded at this, but my ambition is always to have more of the stuff written down.
Yes, communication requires such tremendous effort, always a lot more than we think. And I think in that rapid scale, it's probably the same thing. So you're talking about the coupling of the code to the team, to the architecture. Are there any other challenges that you faced in this rapid scale? I mean, even as CTO in this environment, C-suite challenges?
There's a lot of work that goes into tempering expectations and also educating about how technology actually works. I was just looking at the CTO levels playbooks, and there's one in there about prototypes. And this is a conversation I've had with every CEO I talk with. Everybody wants you to scale the prototype. It's just like, well, how do I not have to rewrite anything? And I'm like, well, that's just not how it works. That expectation setting of, well, what is it actually going to take to build something that is scalable? Because usually when I'm brought in or, you know, when I'm joining a company, we found product market fit. It's like, okay, now we got to go build this thing for real. And the reality is like that just, it takes longer than anybody wants it to.
Yeah, the prototype to production evil path, shortest path to production is very damaging. So then talk to me about then if you're at the apex, you know, you have these issues of scale, how the heck do you manage the rifts? But it's heartbreaking stuff.
Yeah, anytime you have to do a riff, it's devastating because it's people's lives, right? And as hard as it is for me sitting in that chair, I know for the people impacted, it's going to be a day they remember. They're having a worse day than me in those moments, for sure. And keeping people at the center of it and thinking about, like, well, how would you want this to go down for yourself if you were in those shoes is one of the things that I think about. And just making sure that we're the, you know, as a CTO, especially in a startup, you have a seat at the table for not just like who's getting let go, but how, and making sure that we're doing this in a way that's respectful to people. And I've seen a few different ways of it being done. And some of those are better than others. People remember how they're treated in those moments. So I think part of it for me is just like not forgetting. I think it's a not uncommon thing for people in the situation, for executives to depersonalize in some way as a coping mechanism. It's hard going through that whole process. And then afterwards, to me, one of the big things that I try to do is just show up and have those hard conversations, show up and to the one-on-one, show up to the team meetings. You don't have all the answers. You don't know. Everybody wants to be reassured that it's never going to happen again. At the end of the day, you don't know. You hope that it was enough, but how we show up in those moments is important to the team, is important to the people.
Especially since you're probably talking to someone that just a year or two ago, you were enthusiastically enrolling into the position.
And would still hire in a heartbeat today. It's devastating. So there's that part of it. And then also, I think the thing we were kind of hitting on earlier is when I started, the team was managing their roadmap week to week because it was just a few people. And we built out a process for having quarterly roadmaps and all of these things. Well, it's hard to have a quarterly roadmap when you don't know what tomorrow's going to bring, right? Or as the team gets smaller and smaller. And so you're kind of going from having product market fit and figuring out how to build something for scale, how to rebuild what we're doing, to product market fit's a little more iffy. We need to be in rapid prototyping mode, right? And it's just a different way, a different mentality, a different set of systems that you use, a different way of working. Like we did a bunch of work to move our infrastructure into Terraform. Does that matter, you know, as you get smaller again? Like, it's just like not what you would do. But to support a team of 60 and growing devs, you need to do some of those things, right? But then do you undo it?
Yes, that's actually, the Terraform was a great example. Because I guess when you're in your role as CTO, obviously you're now the voice of who needs to be cut. Or like, you probably get the task, hey, this is our budget. This is what it needs to be shrunk to. Tracy, make it happen.
Right.
That sucks, man.
Definitely sucks. Would not recommend.
Yeah. Well, I think it's probably an amazing skill that you've developed. Not something to be proud of, but probably, I mean, even just listening to you say how you just show up for the person. I see these TikTok videos where people are secretly recording being laid off, and you can tell that the consultant was hired to do the layoffs. Consultants come in and they then, HR as a service or whatever, or layoff person as a service. And, you know, it's, and it's, I can only imagine it's leaders or C-suites who are terrified. And then they just buy that service and they have people lay off their workforce.
Yeah, I fortunately have not been anywhere that had enough money to hire it out. I don't know if that's fortunate or unfortunate. I've done a lot of these myself. It's tough because I feel like in many ways, a lot of processes get created because of the worst thing that can happen. And I feel like a lot of the layoff processes come out of that. And so I think it is more inhumane than it probably needs to be or should be. But there's also protecting. Anyway, it's a hard thing. I'd love to never do that again.
Yeah. Well, thanks for sharing that. I think I want our listeners to experience a little bit of what you went through with the rapid rise and then the rapid unwind.
Yeah.
How are you spending this time? If you're open to talking about this, you're in the job market, CTO recruiting, being recruited or participating in some processes, or what would you recommend for people out there doing this right now?
Well, I found a couple things useful. The last year at Fly Homes was pretty hard emotionally. And so I definitely took a couple months of just not putting a lot of pressure on myself. And it was the holidays, so I just, you know, kind of did that. And then I picked up this book called Designing Your Life, which has been pretty interesting, which is these guys out of Stanford who are designers, product designers, basically put this book together about applying product design principles to what do you want to do with your life. And so kind of ideating and then prototyping and running small experiments. And anyway, that's been a very interesting way of looking at the problem of like, well, what should I do next? Because I think for me, it's like, do I go and do another one of these, another startup role, which I think is likely what will happen. But, you know, part of me was like, should I start my own thing? Should I do something else? And so having a framework to think through that was interesting.
Yeah. Just as a closing thought, is there one or two takeaways from that book that stuck with you or has altered the way in which you show up in this sort of in-between phase?
It made me feel more open to possibilities where I'd been pretty constricted about how I was thinking about things. One of the exercises they have you do is write out some odysseys, and these odysseys are sort of like, what are milestones in your life? If you kind of just keep doing what you're doing, what are milestones that you might hit in the next 5 years? And then if that's not possible, if that's not available to you for some reason, what would you do in the next 5 years? And then if you had no constraints at all, money or time or whatever, if you had no constraints, what would you do? And what do those milestones look like? And then how do you feel about each of those? That exercise is actually quite interesting and quite enlightening. I would highly recommend that.
I imagine you access parts of your brain, parts of the way you're thinking, parts of your logical deductions that just produces, I'm sure, new thoughts like, wow, I didn't realize that this is what that means.
Yeah. And I didn't know how that made me feel. I never really thought about it that way.
I really like that. I think so much of what we go through, we just don't give ourselves permission to think about, like you said, what if there was no constraint? What if there was an unbridled freedom?
It turns out my plan with no constraints was not a plan, and I couldn't actually come up with milestones for myself. So I think it's best that I I continue having some constraints.
I love that. Yeah, floating on a ball in a pool for the next 20 years is not a plan.
Right. What's my milestone? I made it to the other side.
I don't know. Yeah. Two cocktails in both hands? I don't know. Is that a milestone? Well, Tracy, good luck with your journey. I hope by the time this is published, you can share some news with me. But thanks for being on the CTO podcast.
Oh, thanks for having me. It was a true pleasure. Always enjoy chatting with you. So thank you.
Thank you. That's the show. Check out ctopod.com. Stay connected. We love hearing from CTOs. We love hearing from CEOs. Anybody who needs to get their CTO plugged in, check out 7ctos.com. There are membership levels for everybody, so it's never too late to expand your network, nurture your relationships, and please, let's see each other soon, like next week. Cheers.